Hello, everybody, and welcome back to In My Non-Expert Opinion. It's your host, Chelsea Reif, and you are in for part two of the interview I did last week with Liz Tran. If you haven't listened to part one, you need to pause right now, go scroll back to part one, download that and listen first so that you have the context and it sets the scene for part two. Part one, Liz and I got really into how she built her career. We talked about finances, what it was like being the only female at a venture capital firm. I mean, that still blows my mind of how she even ended up in the business she is today. And part two is all about writing a book. So selfishly, I have been writing a lot and wanted to pick her brain about writing. So it's like part interview, part consult into what it's like to write a book. So if you are someone that has been playing around with your writing, you want to launch a Substack, you're writing a book, you're writing something and you don't know what it is yet, like me, then I highly encourage you to listen to this episode because it's basically like how to write a book. We talk about the publishing process, what it's like to develop your writing skills, how to get a book deal, how to land an agent. Like there's so many things about writing a book that I don't think people even realize. And I really got into it with Liz. I was like, can you just spill all the tea and share all the secrets about this? And she pretty much did. She actually shares stories of her friends who got pretty big book deals despite having small social media followings, which I think is a huge lesson for micro creators. We do not need to invest all our time and energy into always building your Instagram following when you could do things like build your email list, your Substack, your podcast, and that could actually help you with a book deal. Or it might not even have to do with that. You could just have really quality content. She emphasizes the importance of authenticity and standing for something relevant. And we talk a lot about the whole process. So what is the editing process like? What's the beauty in sharing stories that don't really have that neat, happy ending? She actually shares two of her favorite stories from her book, The Karma of Success, including one about her friend that founded a company and is also a vocal BDSM educator and dominatrix. Yeah, wasn't expecting that. And then another about her own journey of trying to get pregnant for 3 years and the beauty found in the imperfection of life. So the book is already out, The Karma of Success. You can get it wherever you find books. You can also find it on her website. And I really think you're going to love this book, especially if you're someone who's struggled with having more of a spiritual identity or background and then going into business, which can be really masculine and analytical and data-driven. It can start to feel a little like, you know, what are you doing bringing your spirituality into this? Or you don't need to work on your energy. You need to work on this spreadsheet. I know I used to struggle with that in business and especially my podcast, feeling like I have to choose one or the other and kind of pick a lane. And I feel like Liz is the embodiment of you actually don't have to pick a lane. And the magic comes when you choose not to pick a lane and live in your true authenticity and write and speak and build and create from the heart. Incredible things will happen. Liz is such a wealth of knowledge and such a generous person when it comes to providing information that has context and transparency. I know you all know that I value that, but to have a guest on and share certain things like numbers that they made and, you know, what they really went through when it comes to financial struggles, that's just something that not everyone's willing to open up about. So I think having Liz on and sharing her story will help a lot of you that might be going through the same thing. So with that, let's carry on from part one and get right into part two with Liz Tran, the author of Karma of Success and founder of Reset. So let's talk about the book. I have a lot of selfish questions of how to write a book. I know that you need an audience to write a book. I know that there are a million drafts that go into it. I know that it's not, to me, writing a book is like the same thing as directing a movie. It seems like so much work. So can we start from the beginning? Where did your book idea even come from? And then how did you get it into motion to get published?
Yes, great question. So it was right when Reset closed and I left the city. So I had my apartment in New York, but I went to Canada to stay with my husband's family for a little bit because the borders were closing basically. He's Canadian. And if we didn't leave that day, then we didn't know if we'd be able to like get through during the pandemic and he wanted to be with his family. So we went there and my brother moved into my apartment. So he didn't have to stay with roommates. And when I was in Canada, I wound up, you know, thank goodness getting a PPP loan that they were giving out during the pandemic. And it was like just enough to have me like pay my one employee, pay myself, pay some bills during this amount of time. And I think it covered bills for like 4 months or something like that. And I was like, wow. what could this be trying to give me right now? I was like, I think it's time for me to learn how to write, to like write this book and work on it. And so I dove into book proposal. I had a couple of book proposals that friends had sent me about what the format should be. I wound up taking this like $99 how to write a book proposal course from Jen Sincero, who's the author of You Are a Badass. And so then I started like putting together this proposal. And it was originally this idea of like different essays that were about, you know, personal growth moments that I've had in my life, like, you know, doing ayahuasca or, you know, doing a past life reading. And I worked on it all summer long, also while I was like doing other things to try to get Reset 2.0 off the ground. So recording online classes, you know, trying to get executive coaching clients, blah, blah, blah. And at the end of the summer, I had this book proposal. And a book proposal is basically like your marketing plan about who you are, how you're going to get people to buy your book, plus a couple samples of your writing. So you want to write like two or three chapters of your book, plus have a full table of contents laid out. So it took all summer, in addition to my other work. I sent it to one agent, like my dream agent. And she wrote back and she said, I love this premise. The idea is great, but the writing is incredibly repetitive. And I can't take this book on. And I felt totally destroyed. I went for a long run and I came to the conclusion that I really needed to structurally learn how to write. And at that time, I was like, oh, I'm going to sell this book proposal and it's going to change everything. You know, it'll help me with my life. So, you know, I'll get an infusion of money and then all my financial problems will be taken care of. It'll be great. And that wasn't the case, but I still didn't veer. I was like, okay, this is a fork in the road. I'm going to need to make money a different way. And I'm also going to need to learn how to write. So then for the next almost year, I read a lot of writing books. And I don't know if everyone has to do this, but from where I was coming from, I was a very stilted creative. I'd been working in these highly functional, operational roles, and I hadn't really created anything with my own voice. Like all the work I was doing in venture capital, it was to support other people in bringing their dreams to life. And so I wasn't used to being able to like express my opinion, right? Or even like know what I thought about a topic. And so I think it took me longer than it may take other people. And so I said to myself, okay, for this year, I'm only going to take on work that pays me my full rate. That's what I'm calling in from the universe, or gets me closer to writing this book. And so the podcast became a good big part of that. And then it went from this way to process all this emotional baggage to also a way to kind of clarify my ideas. Like I'd be like, oh, I have this idea for a podcast episode. Oh, that would be a great chapter in the book. And so I kept podcasting. I kept working on Instagram. I kept, you know, getting my coaching business off the ground. And in my spare time, I just wrote all these pages that I wound up throwing away because they weren't very good, but it was practice. You know, I was learning a new skill that I wasn't previously very good at. And by about a year later, I had a new proposal. This was a different book. I was going to basically write like a little bit of like a how-to, like a business book that was, you know, related to my work as an executive coach. And I sent it out to a bunch of agents. I literally just found their email addresses online through this website called Publishers Marketplace. You sign up for like a $30 subscription and you can see like every single book deal in the world and who was the agent on it and who the publisher was. And then there's some coded language for how much the book sold for. So if they say like it's a major deal, I think that means it was like over 500K or something like that. If it's like a significant deal, it's over 250K, whatever. So I was like looking at all these agents. I made like a short list of ones that I thought might be interested in this kind of business writing. And I wound up, I mean, this is like a whole thing where that's just really hard. There are some agents who really wanted to work with me, but didn't really get the book. There are other agents who were really excited about the book, but they didn't really like my platform. And so I was sort of like, okay, how do I figure this out? There was one agent who did want to work with me, but I didn't really like him. I thought he was kind of misogynistic and like maybe a little racist. And even though I didn't have anyone else in my pocket yet, I was like, you know what? No, I'm going to pass on you because I'm clear about what I want in an agent. You know, I was looking for someone who got my vision, believed in me and was going to hustle, and also believed in kind of this idea of bringing a new type of business coaching to, you know, a modern audience of like people who are underrepresented. So I finally found my agent and she was amazing. And the first thing she said to me is she was like, this book is too generic. It's just business advice. She was like, I want to know who you really are. Like, what motivates you? What are you passionate about? What do you talk about on your podcast? And I told her that a lot of what I cared about was the intersection of spirituality and business in my own life and how important my base of spirituality, aka like, you know, believing in the power to manifest, believing in tracking my energy levels. You know, I don't mean like religion, like Catholicism, spirituality. I mean like your connection to your inner world. And she was like, great, write about that. And I was like, well, one agent told me that I needed to pick a lane. I could either write a business book or I could write a spirituality book. And if I wrote a hybrid, then the bookstores would be really confused about where to place me. And she was like, no, that's garbage. Don't do this. This will make you stand out. And this is true to who you are. So she really was this amazing angel who came into my life to basically say, like, you are okay as you are. Be who you are, write about who you actually authentically are. And that's the best idea. That's the only idea. And it was so healing for me because my agent is actually a Vietnamese woman. I'm Vietnamese and she's probably about my mom's age, maybe a little bit younger. And she was this like real maternal role model of someone who was like, I believe in you. Be exactly who you are. Don't change. And my mom had never been like that. Like she always wanted me to be different than I was. And so it was so deeply healing, like not even just on a creative level, but like an emotional level. And I never told my agent this because I thought it would be weird, but she knows how much she matters to me. And then we wound up selling the book to, it went to auction, which means like a bunch of publishers bid on it. And then the person who won the auction was this woman named Mary Sun, another Asian American woman who was amazing. And, the assistant editor is a woman named Veronica, who she doesn't work there at Penguin Random House anymore, but she was so influential in my book. And she's also a woman of color. And it's a business imprint. And they bought this book that is like half spirituality. And it was just this incredible experience where like in 15 years of publishing, my agent was like, I mean, actually I think she's been publishing for like 20 years, but she was like, I've never been on a deal where the writer, publisher, and agent are all women of color before. She was like, this is amazing. And
wow,
Mary, who was my editor, she hadn't heard of the book before, or she hadn't heard of my podcast before. But when she was looking at the book, she listened to every single podcast episode. I think I maybe had like 40 at the time. And she listened to every single one, which took up a lot of time. And she was like, I have to do this deal. And so the podcast, which is funny, it's this thing that I never made money off of. It was just something I like really felt compelled to do. Like I just like wanted to do it. I needed to do it. It was like my first form of creativity and expression. And it led in many ways, like it wasn't even about platform numbers, but it was just kind of the actual content of what I was talking about really resonated with her. And so that was like the whole process. And so the beginning of it was, you know, May or probably March 2020 is when I started the writing process. And then I sold my book in October of 2021. So about a year and a half later after I started. And then it takes 2 years. So you get a year to write the book and then a year for the publisher to do their thing, you know, like make the cover, write the content, blah, 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 market it, get the sales team on it. So it's a pretty long process. Now it's been about 3 years since a little bit over 3 years since I like in earnest started writing, but it's been life changing, like really, truly. Now I see myself in a different way where I'm like, you know what? I'm allowed to have an opinion.
Wow. I am like standing ovation to all of this. I mean, the fact that you said the whole team on your book is women of color, that encouraged you and didn't try to push you in a box and say, hey, you know, actually, yeah, you should pick a lane because it will make you more money, or, you know, you would just get more deals if you did it this way. Like, I just love that you had people rooting for you in your corner who also just understood that you had something unique to say. Because I think a lot of people listening right now do think that their writing is either cliched or repetitive or won't stand out in the marketplace. And they're like, well, then why would I even write? You know, there's already a book about habits. Why would I write a book about habits? There's already books about travel. Why would I write a book about travel? And I feel like you're a perfect example of, because it's you, like you have your own unique experience that makes it different. Did you ever deal with a, you know, while you were writing that mental imposter syndrome of like, there's kind of books like this out here already, or like, you know, if you really dig, you might find one like this. And how did you overcome any mental struggles while in the process of writing?
Yeah. You know, I think I definitely felt that. And it was like, for me, it was less of like, you know, are there other books out there like this? But I just kept thinking, how am I going to make this a bestseller? Are people going to like me? Are they going to think this is valuable? And I remember having this thought in probably, so I signed my book deal in November, and then I had this thought in March. So I'd been writing for a couple months and it wasn't really flowing. It felt like I was sitting down every day and doing it, but I just didn't know what direction I was going or what I was doing. And I had this thought that like, this might be the only book that I write. So I've got to really write what I love. And honestly, like, fuck if this book does well, who cares? Like, if this is my one chance to like say what I want in the world, like I need to say that without worrying about the way it's going to be perceived. And that was really freeing. And it was really freeing because I didn't have to think anymore about like, are people going to like this? Is this going to be useful to people? And obviously like you want to write something that is helpful for people, but I really had to kind of overcome that block and make it completely just about self-expression in order for me to not be so self-conscious about my writing. And that's one thing about writing nonfiction is like, you are a personality and it feels a little vulnerable of like, are people gonna like me? Am I okay? Especially for women, I think, you know, we've been programmed to see a lot of our worth as whether or not we are providing for other people and whether or not, you know, other people think that we're good enough. And so I had to really fight against that and just be like, I'm writing whatever I'm writing. And I actually wound up changing my topic, you know, halfway through, actually not even halfway through, 6 weeks before the book was due, I think did a huge about face and threw away everything I'd written. I had written like probably 30,000 words, so like 3/4 of the book. And I scrapped all of it and I started again with 6 weeks of my deadline. And I was sort of like, okay, my publisher bought one thing. This is a slightly different thing, right? But it's still a big change. But this is what I know I have to write. And so I wrote my editor and I was like, hey, thinking of changing a few things, I might need a little bit of an extension. And she said, yeah, sure, take an extension. You know, you have 2 or 3 months like buffer. It's very flexible. And so then now that I was like able to like think about what I really wanted to write and actually go for it, I wrote the whole book in 6 weeks, like 95% of it. And I turned it in on time. And then my editor read it in a couple days and she wrote me back and she said, this is one of the best manuscripts I've ever read from a first-time author.
Wow.
I mean, it was like such good feedback. And it was because I let myself not worry about whether or not what I was writing was trite or if it was silly or if people would think I was dumb or if people would think I was cheesy. You know, I wrote about lots of things that kind of maybe make me look bad. I don't know. Like, I actually don't know or not, but like they're just true and like probably complex and like arise different feelings in different people, but it was true. And like, that's the thing is like the book was true to me and it was true to like what actually happened in my life. And it's true to what I actually believe, like all the tools that I relied on when I was trying to get Reset off the ground again. Like I did all those things, all the things I wrote about in the book, I actually did them and they really saved me. And so I was really happy to hear that. But honestly, if I hadn't gotten that feedback, I would still be really proud of the book. And truly, no matter what happens with the book, it's like everything to me. Like, you know, the book could sell 100 copies and I'd still be like, yes, I wrote this. Yeah. This is amazing.
Yeah. You wrote a body of work. Like that's insane. I'm proud of you. I'm happy for you. I think it's just really good insight to hear that as soon as you started writing exactly what you wanted to write without the perception of like, yeah, who's going to see this? Are they going to think I'm a bad person? Or my exes or parents or whoever that we care about is going to read this? Are they going to feel hurt or whatever the case is? It's like when you wrote your truth, that's when you got the best feedback and that's when you felt the best. And so now the outcome is kind of a moot point.
Yes. And everyone has a book in them. You know, that's like something that is said, you know, everyone has at least one book in them. And I do think it's really true. But just as you said, you cannot worry about what your parents or your best friend or your exes think. I took this memoir writing class pretty early on through like the continuing education program at Stanford. It was like night classes, all done online. And something that my teacher, John Evans, said is he was like, it's tricky when you're writing about your own life because it's natural and it's human to worry about how the people closest in your life will receive it. He's like, we can't write that way. Shut it all down. Like, write as if no one else is going to read this and then worry about it later. You know, maybe at the end of your draft, you have to take some things out, right? Like, maybe, but like, we cannot censor ourselves from the beginning. Just write it all down and then wait until the end. And then you can tweak here and there. It still really matters to you how people are going to read it, but you can't put a damper on that voice, because that true voice inside of you, your inner genius, it can be so fragile at times that being muffled even a little bit can just totally depress that urge, you know, that truth, that genius. And so I try to think of it all the time as like, you have this inner genius that's kind of whispering. It's very quiet. It's really shy. And the more you let it express exactly what it needs to express, the stronger it becomes.
Yeah, I remember, I think on Instagram, I follow this woman, Ayanna Holloway. She does breath work and she's written a book. And I remember she posted something that said, what if they were dead? And that was like, I think her writing mentor's advice. Like, if, you know, I know you're worried about your ex, writing about your ex, but what if they were dead? Would you be worried? And it's like, no, they wouldn't even see it. So she started writing with that in mind. And then to your point, at the end of the draft, if you really want to kill that piece, then yeah, you can take it out. But you cannot write hesitantly, because then it's not your truth.
Right. Exactly. And that's it. That's like what every book is. It's just your truth. And so it doesn't have to be anyone else's truth. My writing teacher, this is so wild. He was with his wife. They were in their 20s, their late 20s, and they were doing a hike through Romania. And his wife was actually very sadly killed by a bear, like in front of his eyes. And he wrote a book about it, which is so painful, right? But it was like this book that was where he's trying to process his own guilt. And when he wrote it, like, he had all these reservations about what people would think. But the things that came out were things he never even expected, you know? And so we're like, actually remarkably bad at predicting how other people are going to respond to us as well. You know, like the people he thought would be like, great, you know, your book's amazing. Like, some people were actually really hurt, and other people he was really nervous about were like, wow, thank you. That was really beautiful. And so regardless, we can't write for others, because we're probably not even accurate in predicting what it is that they want us to write.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Remarkably bad at, like you said, estimating how people are going to react. My ex, when I wanted to start a podcast, I was with this like toxic ex. And at one point he bought me a microphone. And I remember being like, I don't want to start it, like being in a relationship with him, because like, it's, I don't know, it's just the energy is not there. And as soon as we broke up is when I started my podcast and I put all this energy into it. And I remember thinking, he's probably going to hate it because it kind of represents that, like, I was set free and started this podcast. And now he's probably like, wow, like, you know, this bitch started this podcast right after we broke up. Just had all these thoughts about what he was going to think and how he was talking shit about it. And like a year and a half later, he DM'd me on Instagram and he's like, hey, I just want to say I've like listened to a few of your episodes and you're really good at it and I really like it and I'm just like proud of you. And I'm like, wait, what? You're the number one person I thought that would absolutely like hate this podcast. I even think I talked shit about him in one episode. I was like, I don't think he listened to all the episodes yet. But that was just funny that, to your point, we just have a protection layer, I think it is. And that's what keeps a lot of us held back. And the funniest irony about all this is, the thing that we're holding back is probably the thing that we're going to connect with on people the most. Like, that thing that we're feeling shame about or scared or that makes us look like a bad person is the other piece that someone else is hiding, that they're waiting for someone to put it out in the world so they can connect to it.
I could not have said it better. 100%. No one wants to hear the person's story of overnight success where it's like, oh, you know, because it's not true. It doesn't happen. And like, it's also not like interesting or inspiring.
It's boring.
It's like, who cares? Great. Like, you know, and the story is like, oh, I wanted to start a business. So my parents gave me $500,000 to start it. And then I was like immediately nominated for this great award. And then I want, you know, it's like, that's not true for so many people. And so in the book, it also tells a lot of stories of entrepreneurs and people who are activists and artists. And it shows all the intricacies of what their struggle was. You know, it doesn't present them as like these perfect people to idolize. It's like shows that they are these really beautiful humans who have lots of insecurities and flaws, but at the end of the day, like, are still deserving of the expression and the success that they want. And I think that's the way everyone is. I feel like we're all kind of like waiting to feel like we're good enough, or waiting to feel like we're perfect enough to be able to go out and get what we want. But it's really not true. Like, you know, the most successful people, if you look at some of them, they're like some of the most flawed people in the world. You know, like Elon Musk, he needs like so much therapy, right? Like,
literally. Yeah. So I was going to actually bring up Threads, you know, the new app that Instagram just launched. That's literally Twitter. Everyone is freaking out over it because they're like, oh my God, I like can finally express my true self. And this is just stream of consciousness. And I don't have to worry about curated images. And I was like, this is what people have been missing is like, we want to know what you're eating for dinner. Like, I actually do care that, you know, you cuddled with your dog this evening instead of like posting a new podcast episode. Like, I want to know those fun little moments about you. And I think that's why Threads is doing so well. We'll see what happens when this podcast comes out and what, you know, what Mark Zuckerberg ends up adding to this platform. But I think it shows that so many of us have felt suffocated by curation and that we've been very paralyzed to deviate from anything aesthetic. Like, it has to be pretty, it has to match, it has to be cohesive. And I think the era that we're finally in, thank you to TikTok and Threads and etc., is like, we're messy and we have done some hideous things and ugly things, and we're not perfect and we're not proud of everything, but like, that is what makes us human, and that's all we want is human connection.
Yeah, 100%. And everyone is so deserving of love and what they want in life, like no matter what you've done. And I agree. Like, I actually love Threads. I just joined this morning and I spent all this time on it. And, you know, that was like something that I was thinking about. I was like, wow, also this new platform comes at such an amazing time where we can also choose to start again. You know, some of the bad habits that we've created around kind of comparison and editing ourselves on other platforms. You know, it's like just a fresh breath and fresh opportunity to just do things differently.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see where that goes. I have a few like insider baseball questions for writing a book because I know many of my listeners want to write a book. And yeah. I think what's so helpful is you said you took courses, you invested into writing, you know, you weren't just like, ooh, let me start writing. And then I got published. Like you said, the overnight success thing, like that did not happen for you. What are some things that stand out to you in your journey looking back that you're like, either that class or that course or understanding that piece of the publishing business helped? And in that same vein, I think something that I'm really starting to understand that maybe wasn't so clear to me before is publishers do have to make money. And so they do look at people that have platforms or at least something they can build on. So for you, what would you recommend for people starting out that don't have an audience or platform?
Totally. So I actually love this question because when I was writing my book, I was in this cohort of three friends. Like, we were kind of friends of friends that got stitched together because we were all writing our books at the same time. And two of them got the biggest book deals that you can get for people who like aren't famous. People like normal people like me and, you know, lots of normal people. The most that you could really expect from like a nonfiction book deal is $500,000, which is a lot of money. And it's paid out. All these book deals are paid out in four chunks. So you get your first payment when you sign the contract, which usually happens like 2 or 3 months after the deal is like handshake signed. It just takes a long time for the publishers to get their shit together and send you a contract. Then you get paid the next 25% when you turn in the book about a year later. And then you get the next 25% when the book comes out in hardcover. And then you get the next 25% when the book comes out in paperback. So it's kind of like you're getting paid out over the course of like 3 or 4 years. Kind of a long time. But if your book doesn't go hardcover paperback, if it's just paperback, then you get paid in thirds. So book signing, turn in your manuscript, and then the book comes out. And so two of my friends who are in this writers group with me, they got really, really big deals. And honestly, they did not have huge audiences. I think one of them at the time she sold her book had like, I don't know, like 8,000 Instagram followers or something. And then the other person, same thing. I think he's like definitely sub 20,000 Instagram followers, you know, but it was just that the topic of what they were writing about was so current and so interesting that it really stood out. And I think they're both also exceptional writers. So like one of them, he was writing this topic about, I think his topic is about curiosity. It's called Seek. And so he basically went around and kind of like interviewed people who have like the opposite political beliefs as he does. He's like a openly liberal gay man, and he went to like all these like evangelical churches and stuff like that, and interviewed people who have opposite personalities. So that kind of premise was really interesting. And he didn't have a huge following, but I'm not saying anything that other people don't know. Like if you, you know, Google their book deals, then it shows up pretty much, it like tells you that the book deal was really big, basically. And then my other friend who, I guess I'll just be really transparent, sold my book deal for like mid 200s, which is a really good book deal for someone who, you know, like is a normal person also. And I was really happy with it. It was kind of like my dream number. And I have about 150,000 Instagram followers. And I had like my newsletter at the time was like maybe 6,000 people. But I have a friend who also sold her book deal for probably the same amount, I think. And she doesn't really have any followers, but she's like the leader of an organization. Like she started this nonprofit organization that, you know, has a lot to say in this modern world. And so I don't think it's like the be all end all, like the sheer number of followers that you have. But I think being able to represent something, stand for something and say something that is, you know, relevant in this zeitgeist right now is really important. Because there are actually a lot of people who don't have big followings. Like I just read this book about from a journalist who called Swipe Up for More. And it's about like the inner lives of influencers. And she didn't really have any following, but she was this journalist who had like expertise in influencers. And, you know, her writing style was really great. And so I don't want to like bemoan too much. Like you need to have, you know, it's not like the numbers you have are necessarily going to translate into, you know, your book deal. But I do think you have to have kind of like, even if the platform isn't social media, it's like a platform of something that you're standing for, whether it's your organization or a club or something like that. So that's the first thing I'll say. It's not always an exact ratio, but doesn't hurt. So how I sort of thought about it was like, you know, honestly, I look back at my book deal and I think that like maybe my platform did carry me through a little bit because I don't know, even after doing all that writing work, my proposal wound up being really different from what I actually wrote. And I think if I had written the proposal for what I actually wrote, maybe it would have like been easier or even done better and made more money. But it took me, like I'm kind of a figure it out type of person as I go. And so I think I just needed more time to like figure it out. You know, one of my closest friends, she's writing a book proposal right now. She's super crisp on what it's going to be. I don't think it's going to change. And it's a very crystal clear vision. And I think her book deal is going to go really well. Like it's not, you know, it's a really interesting take on like, I don't want to give it away, but I think her perspective is really cool and very interesting. And agents have really been, you know, excited about it. And so I would say like, focus on what it is that you want to say and becoming like an expert in that space, whatever it is. And if you are an expert in that arena, it doesn't actually matter that much how big your audience is.
Okay, this is amazing news for all the micro creators listening that you do not need to have like 500,000 followers. You don't need to have an email list of 70,000 subscribers. Not saying that it doesn't hurt, right? I think we're all very aware that numbers and analytics always help something, right? Like data talks. So I don't think that's something to completely dismiss, but I think it's so incredible and reaffirming to hear that like it actually, depending on your writing style and what you're talking about, could be that you have something really cool to say and that a publisher wants to pick it up. Can you also share the book proposal writing process? I think you said you actually took a course on how to write a book proposal. Are you getting someone to look at that? Do you ask a friend or are you just like, I trust that this is good and I'm going to submit it?
Yeah, I did a lot of rounds of edits. I did not show it to anyone beforehand. And, you know, it's funny, I didn't even show it to my husband. And he reads everything I write. I think that was because I felt like very vulnerable because I had already done it a year before. You know, like I had written another book proposal and I had showed it to a bunch of friends and to get their feedback on it. And I showed it to my husband and he had spent like, I don't know, like 20 hours editing it. And then so I felt a little sheepish the second time around where I was just like, I don't know. I don't know if I can really make my friends go through this all over again, but that's probably like a limiting belief on my mind. And so I kind of did it in secret, but I do recommend that people do show their work to other people, but, you know, show the pancake, you know, don't show the batter, like wait till you've like done your own round of revisions on it. I think writing is all in the editing process. It's like looking at something over and over and over again. Haruki Murakami, you know, the prolific novelist and nonfiction writer, I think he won the Pulitzer Prize, maybe. I don't know. He's like a great, great writer. And he always says that, you know, it's all in the editing. So he writes his first draft just without even second guessing himself. It is just almost purely stream of consciousness. No holding himself back in any way. On the second draft, he actually goes back and he like edits to make sure that it makes sense, you know? And then the third draft, he like has another type of edit that he does. And then his fourth draft, I think he then shows it to his wife. And so he has a process of the multi-layers. And so I would say like edit it a few times yourself and then send it to your most trusted advisors. But the thing is, like, you want to send it to people who read a lot, because not everyone's going to have writing experts in their lives. But to me, one of the greatest proxies to, you know, taste and perspective is someone who's spending a lot of time reading really good books. And so even when I was writing, I was reading all the time, and I wasn't just reading research like other nonfiction books with, you know, statistics and studies and things that I could reference. I was reading a lot of Joan Didion, Rebecca Solnit, Amy Tan. So people who are writing essays and nonfiction with like a high literary grade, I felt like that helped me a lot. And so I'd say turn to your friends and loved ones who you know are the most voracious readers or actually like interested in the topic that you're talking about and send it to them and see. But don't send it too early because, you know, I think our dreams are like very fragile and they need to be protected at all costs. Like I think of it as like putting them in a little greenhouse, you know, before the shoots and the roots are strong enough to survive all the crazy weather outside. We just need to really baby them and keep them in a climate controlled, really sweet, nice, nurturing setting. And so if you're early on, like, and you really feel like this is so fragile, I cannot take any criticism right now. Like, I think that's kind of where I was, because I'd already had this like disappointment previously. And then I was like, you know, doing this thing, like learning how to write for a year. And I just felt like if I had sent it to someone and they were like, oh, this needs work, I maybe just would have like crumbled into my bed. And so I just kept going with it. I was like, I need to just protect this right now.
Oh, yeah, that is really good advice. I love that quote, show the pancake, not the batter. That's incredible. I'm like writing that down for myself. And yeah, to your point, when, especially when you don't have experience, right? We talked about this before. We already have a lot of trouble like self-sourcing validation. So if you're doing something brand new, like writing a book, and you don't have that background, and then the first thing you hear when you send it off to someone is like, oh, it's not that good, or I don't know, it could do better. Yeah, you're like, okay, well, they're right. I don't have this background. And it's just going to feed that negative part of you. So protect them, nurture them. And then when you're ready, show it to the world. I absolutely love, love, love that advice. So now that we have some insight into how to write a book, I would love to hear what's one of your favorite stories or lessons from the book that you wrote.
Oh, okay. So one of my favorite stories that I talk about in the book, actually, can I just talk about two really quickly? Like I'll make one really short. One is about my friend Kim Pham, who's the founder of this company called Omsun. And they are this amazing like food company that creates any of these like pre-packaged like meal kit type things.
Oh my gosh, I've seen these on Instagram.
Yes. It's amazing. They're so great.
The branding.
Yes. So Kim is like she's the mastermind behind the branding. And she is a very vocal and public BDSM educator and dominatrix. And she like shows up on her public Instagram talking about polyamorous relationships, BDSM, dom kinks, things like that. And she's like dresses in the way that she wants to dress. She wears a lot of kind of like dom inspired fashion. And she is totally unafraid to be her true self. And at one point when they were, you know, they've raised a lot of money kind of through the traditional venture capital channels. And at one point, her co-founder was her sister also was like, I don't know, maybe you should like, I don't know, should you maybe tone it down? Like, I feel like people are like looking at her Instagrams before we show up for a pitch meeting. And she was just like, I just can't do that because who I am in my life is also who I'm at work. And so if I censor who I am in my life, that will be censoring what gifts I bring into the office. And the brand is amazing. It is all Kim. And now it's in every Whole Foods, every single Whole Foods. I think it's in Targets as well. And they have this amazing product line. Their marketing is so grassroots and bananas. Like people are just huge fans of the brand. It's really good quality product, but also the brand stands out as very singular. And so I tell her story because she is such an inspiration to me that truly living your authentic self and really getting to know what your inner genius is will take you anywhere. And you like can it, you can resist the forces that try to, you know, keep you in a box.
Wow. I'm literally stalking her right now. And yeah, her first post is how I blend entrepreneurship with my BDSM work. Incredible.
Isn't she so cool? She's so great.
Obsessed.
And a lot of people send, I think like her level of like authenticity is scary for some people. And so there are these like gnarly trolls who are mean to her, I think because, you know, like her unabashed love of herself threatens them. And she's just still like keeps on trucking and she really loves herself. And, you know, I would love myself too if I were her. She's amazing. And the second story that I like share in the book is it's the last chapter. It's my favorite chapter of the book. It is the chapter where everyone says that they're just crying hysterically. And it talks about my journey of trying to get pregnant for 3 years and like this really stressful fertility process of doing, you know, lots and lots of fertility treatments that take a lot of time and cost a lot of money and never really getting an answer for why none of it is working. And the reason why I really like that story is because it doesn't have a happy ending in the book. It doesn't resolve nicely into a neat little present with a bow. As I was writing it, it was still very much like, I actually don't know how any of this stuff is going to go. And I've had so many disappointments in a row. It's just been so bad. But there is so much beauty to be found in that journey. And I am really, really proud of that because I didn't feel like the need to like write all these stories that were like, and then, you know, a lot of my career is like, and then I had all these failures and here I am now and everything's perfect. Like, yeah, that's a lot of the story that I tell about reset. But I wanted to also share another piece that was like a current unresolved thread in my life that I could still identify all the beautiful, you know, silver linings, golden moments of that and still also say like, yeah, and I don't know if I'm going to get what I want. But like I have learned so many lessons and I feel really lucky.
Wow. That goes back to the whole concept of your humanity, right? Like I love that you said that did not end with what you thought it was going to end, like the happy ending with the bow. I think just so much of us have seen the happy ending with a bow. And that's not the reality for most of us. So to hear people's stories that we can relate to, that it's like, yeah, this hasn't gone the way I wanted it to. It sucked. It's been really shitty. Is like that ends up being true for most of us. And so I think that you have taken that torch, so to speak, and been like, I'm going to talk about this, even though it's not that pretty, is what allows other people to do the same and follow that path.
Totally. And to also say, there is a version of happiness that is not exactly what I wanted or what I planned, but I could still find it. You know, it still exists somewhere. And I think that's really important. You know, I think so much of my journey has been that I haven't gotten what I wanted. You know, like more than anything, when I was 28, I wanted to work at Google. I wanted to work at Facebook. Now I could never get a job there. I interviewed so many times. No one wanted to hire me because I had a horrible GPA and like a really bad resume. And obviously they didn't want to hire me. But then I went on to like go work at one of the best venture capital firms in the world. And so I think that's like very much the thing is like, even in that imperfection, we can find joy and happiness. And I'm a big believer of that. Like that moment, that year where I had to close down Reset and I was $140,000 in debt. At the time, I was like, this is the shittiest year of my life. I like honestly thought about like getting in a car and driving off a bridge sometimes, not to be like, you know, glib about suicidal thoughts, but I'm just sharing how depressed I was that year. And then very soon afterwards, like even with a year's space from that time, I can see that it was actually the beginning of a whole new life. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I think that's what I want everyone who's listening to this, especially if you're thinking about writing a book or expressing yourself in some way, know that all the thorns and all the detours, they are all a part of your story and they're going to make you stand out and shine.
Oh, amen. I am so happy we had this conversation and thank you for being so transparent and so honest. And I know that will only reflect inside the book, which comes out very soon. I'm pretty sure just like a few weeks after this podcast airs. So can you tell us where to find the book and just everywhere we can find you and work with you?
Yeah, the book comes out July 25th and it's called The Karma of Success. You can find it like everywhere, like at Amazon, your local bookstores, independent bookstores. The website for the book is my website, which is Liz Tran.com. And there's a little section where you can read more about the book. There are some great, like, fun giveaways that we're doing, like, associated with the book. So check back on that page. And then my Instagram account is at ResetNYC. And there is the place that I'm sharing stuff that, like, is related to my coaching work that I'm trying to make more accessible to other people. And, you know, as Chelsea and I talked about, now I'm on Threads. So, like, talk to me there. And Chelsea, I need to follow you on Threads so that we can, like, start our Threads relationship as well.
Yes, I'm loving Threads. And I also am obsessed with your feed. It was funny because when we were talking about this podcast, I, like, didn't put two and two together. And I was like, I'm obsessed with the Reset Instagram feed. So just throwing some words of affirmation out there, I'm obsessed with just, like, kind of the mood board Tumblr feel of it all. And it gives me a lot of good fuzzy feelings when I look at it. So thank you for creating Reset. Thank you for writing this book. And thank you for coming on this podcast.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. I love that you ask the real questions. You know, you're like, let's get into it. It's been so fun talking to you and just, like, getting the real truth of everything. So thank you for having me.
Of course. So are we all writing books now? Because I feel like we have all the knowledge we need to be able to do that. Thank you, Liz, for sharing all your wisdom and knowledge. That was so generous. And I truly feel inspired. Like, I'm ready to write a book. And knowing that Liz was so transparent and context in her journey, it gives me a lot of hope, as I'm hoping it did to a lot of you too, that you don't need a big social media following. As long as you are authentic, you have something to say, and you're strong in those beliefs, that's really what makes an incredible story. So I hope this inspired you in some way, especially if you're an indie creator or someone just starting out or any type of creator. You don't need to worry about being a celebrity to make an impact on people's lives. Just the way Liz has made an impact on mine and her book is making an impact on so many people, you don't need to worry about, again, a massive following or huge ass email list or podcast. You really just need to focus on staying what's true to you and believing that it's important, that it's going to help someone. And I'm sure you'll see the magic unfold like it has for Liz. If you found this conversation inspiring or expansive or valuable, I think you know what to do next. You go over to Apple Podcasts or you go over to Spotify and you leave a rating and review. That's just the natural next step. So go to Apple Podcasts, scroll down to the part where it says write a review, go ahead and write that. And as a thank you, I will send you a copy of one of my most famous and popular masterclasses, Interview Like Oprah. So this is only going on until the end of the month. So make sure to get those submissions in before the end of July, because again, this is only good until the end of July. So head over to Apple Podcasts, scroll down to the write a review section. And what you're going to want to do is actually take a screenshot before you submit, and then take that screenshot and send it to info@chelseareif.com or at Chelsea Reif on Instagram. Now on Spotify, all you have to do is go over to the top of the podcast area and see where it says ratings and just hit 5 stars. 5 stars is the only option. If you have feedback, you can please, please, please DM me or email me. I would love to not see it on the star ratings on Spotify. Thank you so much for listening. I truly enjoyed this conversation. Again, make sure you listen to part one too, in case you just jumped right into this one. Part one is full of gold nuggets, and be sure to go follow Liz. You can find The Karma of Success on her website or wherever you get books. You can go find her on Instagram. I mean, her Instagram is truly one of my favorites, the Reset account, and check out her website. And if you're in New York, go support her book launch. She's doing a book launch, I think, in the last week of July. So be sure to check out where you can go find that. And let's support our creators, right? We need more women creating stories and taking up space. And I hope, whether that's supporting Liz, myself, or yourself, that you go ahead and do that. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you next week.